This is Monday, the 3rd of July, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming up, many in the U.S. news media say the U.S. president is out to get them. The president says the same about the media.
The fake media is trying to silence us, but we will not let them.
We'll explore the situation with VOA's senior White House correspondent Pete Heinlein. Also ahead, President Trump says he'll talk with the leaders of three European allies before he embarks on a journey to a summit of world leaders in Germany. And there's been an extension of a deadline for Qatar to comply with demands of its Arab neighbors, all on today's International Edition. President Trump increased his attacks on U.S. news media by tweeting an altered 10-year-old wrestling video that showed him tackling and punching a figure labeled as CNN. International Edition Steve Norman has more.
The video singling out CNN President Trump posted to his Twitter account came from a professional event where Mr. Trump performed outside the wrestling ring in a fake match. The CNN logo is superimposed on the head of Mr. Trump's conquered opponent. White House Homeland Security Advisor Tom Bossert rejected the idea that someone might interpret the Trump video as a threat against journalists. He appeared on the ABC television program this week.
He's the most genuine person, and the people that see politicians and then see him find him to be someone that they can understand and relate to.
Mr. Trump's tweet drew scores of negative reaction, but he issued another tweet pledging he would triumph over what he called the dishonest media. The tweet was accompanied with a video excerpt of his speech Saturday at a rally in Washington commemorating the upcoming Independence Day holiday.
The fake media is trying to silence us, but we will not let them, because the people know the truth. The fake media tried to stop us from going to the White House. But I'm president, and they're not.
President Trump has rallied against major newspapers and television networks for their coverage of his five-month-old presidency, but he has aimed increasing vitriol in recent days against CNN. I'm Steve Norman.
Now, if you're not aware, CNN is cable news network, but although that, as CNN goes all over the world, I imagine most people know what it is. Couple questions being asked. Is the United States witnessing a titanic struggle between a populist president and a connected media onslaught waged by liberal-dominated news industry giants and backed by wealthy coastal elites? Or are we seeing an egomaniacal, mentally unstable, and increasingly unpopular former reality TV personality lashing out at media critics with vicious, vulgar tweets in a desperate attempt to divert attention from his collapsing presidency? Joining us is the man who asked those questions in his reporting on the VOA News website. Pete Heinlein is VOA's senior White House correspondent, and he joins us in our Washington studio. Okay, so which part of those two questions are true?
Well, that's a good question.
And that's why I asked
it. That's why you asked, and I'm going to parry that question. But seriously, a growing number of people are concerned about President Trump's state of mind as he makes these outrageous tweets and posts things that no president in history would even think of putting out. Not that they've had access to Twitter, except in the past decade or so. But there are those who are Trump supporters in a vast swath of America between the coasts who see Trump as waging a battle on their behalf. And they're two separate Americas seeming to exist in echo chambers where they listen only to people who agree with themselves and shut out the people on the other side of the debate.
Is this increasing division dangerous, do you think?
Well, certainly there are people talking about the possibility of some kind of conflict coming if we don't find a way to bridge the gap between these two increasingly polarized sections of the electorate.
Controversy, as you know, continues about the president's use of Twitter to what he claims is to communicate with the people of the United States without an interpretation of what he calls fake news. How much support is there? What is it, just the base? Is it, and how big is that base? What's the percentage, do you think, of the base?
Well, hard to judge. However, you might look at the number of people who retweeted his video that he posted on Twitter yesterday. Trump posted a video of himself smacking down a WrestleMania character with a CNN head imposed on it. And that has been retweeted 300,000 times and liked 500,000 times. It's remarkable that so many people would find that entertaining, humorous, whereas the CNN staff who saw that are concerned, and a lot of other journalists are too, I might say, that that could be inciting violence against journalists.
Well, even if we go a step lower than that, what's it doing to the believability of media throughout this country?
Well, it's certainly putting a big question mark. President Trump has put a question mark in the minds of many about how honest and trustworthy our media are. And the spokesman at the White House, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, asked just that question in one of the briefings. In fact, two of the briefings last week, saying, how honest, how trustworthy are we? What, have we gotten to a place where people don't trust the media or can't trust the media anymore? It's new territory. It's uncharted waters.
Yeah, and we have a person who floats and rows in those uncharted waters. That's Andrew Palchevsky.
Keeping his head above the surface.
Trying my best, anyway.
At times. He just got a buzz cut, so I don't know what that's for. But nevertheless, he is keeping his head above the water. Why? You know, Pete Hyndlin and I are old. You're young, okay? So therefore, do you have a different perspective of what is happening here? We're looking at social media and we're saying this never happened before. This shouldn't be happening now.
Well, President Trump is saying the exact same thing, because prior to that video that he released, he sent out a tweet over the weekend where he said, "My use of social media is not presidential, it's modern day presidential. Make America great again." So lots of people talking about that, saying, what exactly is modern-day presidential? And many of Trump's supporters saying that Trump is just communicating in a new way to more people than ever before. And they're comparing it to previous presidents who have used things like, I don't know, radio, television, things that were unique at the time and had never been used before in that way.
But weren't limited to how many characters?
And
I think that's a major part of it, using Twitter.
It is. You have to be very succinct, and sometimes your thoughts get boiled down into these little nuggets that are almost like sound bites, and sometimes I think the meaning gets lost in that. Certainly with this video, the meaning is having a lot of people scratching their heads. Certainly journalists, as Pete mentioned, are concerned about their safety. Democrats are beside themselves saying it's unbecoming of a president. Many Republicans are cheering this on, as Pete mentioned, retweeting this. But then you have some Republicans saying, why isn't he using his Twitter to talk about things like healthcare, like his agenda, what he wants to get passed through Congress? He's got this great mouthpiece, but he's not using it to actually address his legislative issues.
You got to wonder about people on his staff inside the White House, and especially members of his cabinet, who were saying one thing. Pete, you can jump in here as well. Members of the cabinet, such as Director of Homeland Security, the Secretary of State, saying one thing and then having Donald Trump, the president, tweet something else.
Yeah, it's a conundrum, and we scratch our heads in the White House press room trying to figure out what they mean, or do they have a coherent message. On the other hand, you saw on the talk shows yesterday, the Sunday talk shows, administration representatives trying not to criticize the boss and saying, we want to talk about health care, as a way of not having to give their opinions about what are really some incendiary remarks.
Where are we going here, Pete?
Well, every day is a new day, I must say. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you're in the White House every day. What's the mood there? I mean, are you separated from, you don't spend all day in the Oval Office, but or on Air Force One, but what's the mood at the White House?
Well, I think there's a mood prevalent among my colleagues that the president is off on a tangent that he's really out to discredit us. And there's a defensive, some kind of a bunker mentality that's developing. And I think there's also a bit of self-righteousness that we are correct. The job of the press is to be adversarial, to criticize the president, to make the president, hold the president accountable and his staff for their actions and their policies.
That's Pete Heinlein, VOA's senior White House correspondent. Joining us also, Andrew Palshevsky, International Edition's social media guru and correspondent. Thank you both for being with us. Among the top stories in the world, President Trump discussed the threat posed by North Korea's nuclear program in separate phone calls with Chinese President Xi Jinping and Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe. A U.S. Navy destroyer sailed within 12 nautical miles of a tiny disputed island in the South China Sea that is claimed by three Asian governments, including China. Saudi Arabia and its allies involved in a prolonged diplomatic dispute with Qatar said they would extend by 48 hours a deadline for Qatar to comply with their demands. The United States has lifted a ban on laptop computers in the cabin of direct flights from Abu Dhabi, the capital of the United Arab Emirates, after that country's flagship carrier Etihad implemented tighter security measures. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
According to the website water.org, 1 in 10 people in the world don't have access to safe water. It's common knowledge that drinking water that has been contaminated with harmful bacteria can make you quite sick. In areas of the world where there is little medical care, this could become a life or death situation. While there has been some success with chemical water treatment, such as adding chlorine to unclean water, bacteria has a way of building up a resistance to such efforts, making the little bugs hard to get rid of. Spanish researchers experimenting with self-propelled micromotors have developed tiny swimming robots that they say can detect and remove harmful bacteria from contaminated water without the need for chemicals or other potentially harmful elements. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We continue on International Edition from VOA. President Donald Trump appealed for unity late Sunday as a deadline imposed on Qatar to meet 13 demands by some of its neighbors was extended by 48 hours. Mr. Trump spoke with the leaders of Saudi Arabia, Abu Dhabi, and Qatar. Amid Kuwaiti mediation efforts, Riyadh, the United Arab Emirates, Bahrain, and Egypt agreed to the deadline extension in their month-long dispute with Doha over its alleged support of terrorism, a charge that it has denied. The Qatari Defense Minister, Khalid bin Mohammed Al Attiyah, said his country will not easily be swallowed up by anyone.
We are ready. We stand ready to defend our country. I hope that we don't come to a stage where, a military intervention is made. But we always stand ready. We are here to defend our country, and we live every day to defend our country, and we will do that.
Now, among the demands, closure of a Turkish base in Qatar and the shuttering of the Al Jazeera broadcast outlet. Qatar's foreign minister, Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdulrahman Al Thani, said the list is made to be rejected and is aimed at infringing on his country's sovereignty. Middle East Institute scholar and former Ambassador David Mack told VOA's Victor Beatty the public nature of the dispute will be difficult to defuse.
Both sides have talked themselves into positions from which it's difficult to back down, and that's a good deal to do with the fact that unlike in the past when matters like this have been dealt with discreetly by diplomats, this time it's being dealt with by public proclamations and statements to the media. I think that's very unfortunate. And I think this crisis can only benefit one nation in the region, and that's Iran.
Qatar is digging in. Defiance says demands made to be rejected. The U.S. also says some of the demands are unreasonable. Where do we go now?
I do agree that some of the demands seem to have been made not to get Qatari acquiescence, but to make it appear that Qatar has been totally defeated. On the other hand, there are some things where Qatar could probably improve its performance, but those are the kind of things that can be worked out through negotiations. It's something that Secretary of State Tillerson, for example, was certainly prepared to work upon.
David Mack said the greatest hope to end the dispute lies in the mediation efforts of countries like Kuwait. University of San Francisco analyst Stephen Zunis is uncertain what additional sanctions could be imposed on Qatar.
In terms of the land, sea, and air blockade, the withdrawal of diplomatic relations, suspending their membership in the Gulf Cooperation Council, which is an important strategic and economic alliance. It's hard to think what additional sanctions could be imposed short of actual war.
Are you surprised this feud's gone on and is becoming as serious as it is?
It is somewhat surprising that Saudi Arabia and its allies would be making such extreme demands. I mean, basically, they are demanding that the Qatar compromise its sovereignty in terms of its domestic and foreign policies to suit that of the regional hegemon, which is Saudi Arabia. Many of the charges are grossly exaggerated. For example, among the list of supposed terrorist groups Qatar is supporting includes the nonviolent pro-democracy movement in neighboring Bahrain. Similarly, the demands to close Al Jazeera, which is a government-supported but editorially independent network, seems nothing short of a censorship of the media beyond the country's international borders.
Now, Egypt has announced that the foreign ministers of the four boycotting countries will meet Wednesday in Cairo to discuss that dispute. Stay with us. We'll cover it for you. This is VOA.
For more on the stories you've heard on our radio programs, visit our website at voanews.com. That's where you'll find in-depth reports, related stories, videos, and more from our team of correspondents. Or take the news with you by downloading podcasts of your favorite VOA program. That's voanews.com. VOANews.com. Online news for a changing world.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
We continue on International Edition from VOA in Washington. Top music artists are always trying to create big hits. Now, two power couples are creating family legacies. VOA Top 20 Countdown host Ray McDonald shares the latest news with my colleague Jim Stevenson.
Having my baby. Two of pop's power couples made the headlines, and the spotlight was on Family Matters. Mm-hmm. First of all, for weeks now, there has been a baby watch with Beyonce and Jay-Z. We know, months actually, we know that Beyonce was expecting twins, and they have been born. However, there is a complication. They remain hospitalized under the lights. Reportedly, the two babies are suffering from jaundice after being born prematurely. This is described as a minor issue. It's not generally dangerous to babies, but it requires that they rest under lights. A source close to the Knowles family said Beyonce's twins were delivered via C-section. It could be a few more weeks before the babies come home. So from the reports that we're getting, there's not really much to worry about.
That's good news.
It's all being handled. Kanye West and Kim Kardashian also want another child, and this would be their third, just as with Beyonce and Jay-Z. However, there are complications here. Kanye and Kim will reportedly use a surrogate to bear their third child. Now, in 2015, after the birth of their son, Saint, Kim was told that she has a condition called placenta accreta, and this makes another pregnancy potentially life-threatening for her. She just couldn't risk it. So Kim and Kanye went to a surrogacy agency to which they reportedly paid a deposit of almost $69,000 to take care of all the legal ramifications and to find a proper candidate. TMZ reports they have found a surrogate. She will receive $45,000 in 10 payments of $4,500. And some of the conditions are rather interesting. If there are multiple babies, the surrogate will get an additional $5,000 per child.
Well, a bonus time.
So, ka-ching. And if she loses reproductive organs, she gets an additional $4,000. I mean, these are the things you have to think about in this type of situation.
It's a whole new world.
It is a whole new world. There are medical considerations to think about. As part of the contract, the surrogate cannot smoke, drink, or do drugs for her entire term. She cannot go in a hot tub or sauna. She cannot eat raw fish. She cannot handle cat litter, apply hair dye, or drink more than one caffeinated drink daily. And she also cannot have sex for 3 weeks after embryo implantation.
Wow.
There has been no official confirmation from Kim and Kanye about this. But we do know that they are keen to have another child. And this, aside from adoption, is the only way that they can do it.
We wish all the best for them, and we know that these children will be growing up in very musical households, which will be fun to see how they turn out.
Yes, it will.
See how the top 20 turns out this week by joining Ray McDonald on VOA 1, and be sure to join him on Twitter.
At Ray on the Hits.
Thanks so much, Ray.
You got it, Jim.
Now that you're all caught up, that is it for us today on International Edition. Find us at voanews.com, like us on Facebook at VOA Now, and follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Thanks for being with us. Thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, Al Santos. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions. This is one of a series on the U.S. Constitution and the structure of the U.S. government.
One of the fundamental principles of the United States Constitution, the law of the land, is the balance and separation of power among the three branches of the government: the legislative, or lawmaking branch, that is the U.S. Congress, the executive branch, which is headed by the president, and the judiciary, which interprets the law at every level and settles legal disputes regarding the meaning and the application of the law. The distribution of power among the three branches is meant to ensure that no one branch of the government is able to gain a disproportionate amount of power over the other two. Each branch has separate and unique powers the others cannot impinge upon, but which are nonetheless subject to acceptance or rejection by the other two branches. This is how the balance of power is kept in check. Thus, the Congress writes and enacts laws. It sets budgets and taxes and authorizes borrowing. It is the only body that can declare war. The Congress may override a presidential veto with a 60% vote. Both the House of Representatives and the Senate initiate bills or potential laws. The Senate also ratifies treaties and confirms presidential appointments to federal posts. The House of Representatives creates federal judgeships and courts, except for the Supreme Court, and has the ability to start impeachment proceedings against federal officials, including the president. Once proposed legislation passes through both houses of the Congress, it goes to the president, who either signs the bill into law or vetoes it. In addition, the president is the commander-in-chief of all armed forces, has the power to make treaties and appointments to federal posts, and ensures that federal laws are executed throughout the country. The judicial branch of the government, which includes the Supreme Court and all lower federal courts, decides the meaning of laws, how to apply them to real situations, and whether a law breaks the rules of the Constitution. The accumulation of all powers, legislative, executive, and judiciary, in the same hands, may justly be pronounced the very definition of tyranny, wrote James Madison, the father of the Constitution. The defect must be supplied by so contriving the interior structure of the government, as that its several constituent parts may, by their mutual relations, be the means of keeping each other in their proper places.
That was an editorial reflecting American ideals and institutions.